WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The assault on Ukraine in the capital of Kyiv is now in its third day. Fox's Steve Harrigan's in Kyiv.
There have been several street battles in the early morning hours, especially in the pre-dawn. Reports are that there were small pockets of Russian special forces moving through the center of the city. So it's clear at some level the Russian forces are inside the capital of Kyiv. Since then, it's been on and off. We've heard some artillery in the distance, but no more of those small arms battles in the city center. As far as the president goes of Ukraine, Zelensky, he has shown himself and posted videos of himself multiple times, really showing the world and showing his people that he's here to stay, that he's not leaving. He said Russia intends to try to destroy him and destroy Ukraine. He says it's not going to happen.
An Alexandria woman is carefully watching the situation in Ukraine where her family lives. Alina Bonisak says her brother and his family fled Kyiv to go to western Ukraine where their father lives.
Right now, I'm just trying to make sure that, you know, my family is makes it through this. What we need to know and understand that it's a different type of enemy.
She says Ukrainians want to fight back against the Russian invasion. The CDC relaxes its mask guidelines for most of the country.
Director Rochelle Walensky says her agency now recommends indoor face coverings in areas with high levels of severe disease and a high potential for strain on the healthcare system.
Now, as the virus continues to circulate in our communities, we must focus our metrics beyond just cases in the community and direct our efforts toward protecting people at high risk for severe illness and preventing COVID-19 from overwhelming our hospitals and our healthcare systems.
Under the new guidance, which also applies to schools, people should use their own discretion on masks in areas with low or medium levels of COVID activity. Jonathan Serry, Fox News.
And the new guidance says schools can allow people to unmask on buses. Prince William County Public School Superintendent Dr. LaTanya McDade saying that after that announcement, the people on school buses can unmask, and so could employees and volunteers in school buildings. Frederick County Public Schools also allowing people to take off masks on school buses. D.C. high schoolers will compete in International Independent Film Competition today.
Deirdre Evans-Pritchard with the D.C. Independent Film Forum telling 7 News the judges will also be teens.
The work is amazing. They make fantastic movies. And so we select from across the world, but also around Washington, D.C.
Among the films, The Lonely Woods, about a dog who encounters a mysterious orb that leads him into a journey into his past. The event is free and being held at the Miracle Theater in Southeast D.C. Rachel Sutherland on WML and WML.com.
And it runs from 1 to 6 p.m. today. WML Sports, the Wizards lost to the Spurs, 157-153 in double overtime. Tonight, the Wizards play the Cavaliers at 8 and the Caps play the Flyers at 12:30. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Fairfax County on 66 eastbound, there is construction. Roadways down to one lane in Manassas between Sudley Road and the car rest area. On the westbound side of 66 in Centerville, construction, only one lane is getting by between the Fairfax County Parkway and 28. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, lanes are clear in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, and no delays between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway or 95. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, decreasing clouds, a high near 43. Tonight, decreasing clouds, a low around 31. And tomorrow, mostly sunny, a high near 54. Monday, sunny, a high near 41. Right now, 32 degrees in Burke, 30 in Rockville, and 34 degrees under mostly cloudy skies in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
This is the Saturday Morning Update. It's Hour 2. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by John Gizzi. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, obviously, we are all following the news out of Ukraine very carefully. And one of the big questions has been sanctions and the effects of sanctions. And you have an interesting perspective on this. You have been in touch for years with many people in Europe, members even of the Ukrainian parliament. And give us some insight, maybe what we don't understand about sanctions.
All right. The sanctions basically forbid mobility in other countries, commerce in other countries, and financial transactions abroad by individuals. Yesterday, the White House finally announced late in the afternoon that sanctions would be placed on various Russian officials, chief among them President Vladimir Putin and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. This has been rumored. It is very rare, if not non-existent, to place sanctions on a head of state and a foreign minister, but it was done. That said, talking to people in the know in Europe and people who know Putin, the conclusion was he's laughing at this. For one thing, no one knows exactly where Putin's vast wealth is, how it is concentrated, or if he needs to go abroad to do anything. As Mikhail Khodorkovsky, himself a former oligarch in Russia who spent 10 years in Putin's prisons, told me on Friday morning, Putin is probably laughing at all of this, so he can't go to Rome to go shopping. He's got his money elsewhere, and he can get his hands on it when he needs it. He also pointed out that a more effective course would have been to put the sanctions on the five most powerful oligarchs in Russia who supply Putin with wealth and largesse. But there's no sign of that, at least not yet. In addition, Radek Sikorski, former Polish foreign minister and member of the European Parliament, said these sanctions are coming too late, and they're not exactly on the right people. He echoed Khodorkovsky's call that the Biden administration should have, and should have done it much sooner, and gone ahead with sanctions on the oligarchs who are supplying the wealth. Overall, it seems as though these sanctions will not be felt for a period of weeks, if not at least 2 months. That, according to Press Secretary Jen Psaki. In the meantime, Ukraine is paying a very big price for punishment that's coming too late, and as many say, it's too little.
There have been reports late in the week about Vladimir Putin's health. What are you hearing on that?
Well, this was brought up in the press briefing by Mikhail Khodorkovsky on Friday morning. He believes that Putin's mental health is what should be questioned. One thing, Putin is now surrounded by yes men. With the possible exception of Foreign Minister Lavrov, everyone there owes their job to the president and knows that if they're on the outs, their usefulness to the state is going to be very limited. So no one is there to criticize the president. In addition, as Khodorkovsky said, this is someone who 20 years ago was simply corrupt and allowed corruption to flourish en masse in Moscow. And there's a saying, he said in Russian, "I prefer a robber to a thug," and he believes Putin has just become a thug, someone who sanctions the murder of opponents, and he does not doubt for a minute that the life of opponents of Vladimir Putin is in danger. In other words, we are not dealing with a stable mind in the Kremlin.
Ukrainian President Zelensky has been defiant. He has rallied his military. He has rallied his country. But what about his potential fate, John?
Well, this is a subject that came up 3 days in a row at the White House press briefings. Can the U.S. for sure say that President Zelensky is safe? And each time, Press Secretary Jen Psaki said he is in a safe place in the Capitol. And, of course, we saw numerous broadcasts that he made and online statements, all of which seem to point to the fact he's still in Kyiv and still in the government buildings, even as the Red Army approaches. Now, I spoke to Oksana Yurietz, a member of the Ukrainian Parliament and a professor of business administration at the college level. She said that Zelensky should be worried and doesn't put it past Putin to have him executed or put on show trial by a puppet government. But in that case, she said, there is a line of succession. mentioned military leaders who would step in to lead the country and lead its armed forces. Right now, Zelensky is in a desperate situation. No one disputes that. But it should be pointed out that it was just a week ago, the New York Times ran a very critical profile of the president, pointing out he's a comedian and people think he's in over his head. Well, maybe there was something to that story, but for now, that comedian speaks to the people and he connects. His final words just before the shooting started were, "If we do nothing tonight, then we may disappear tomorrow." And soon people took to the streets, among them the president that he ousted, Pyotr Poroshenko, the richest man in Ukraine. He was out fighting with the tank battalions.
John, let's turn to the White House and the White House briefing room. Quite a bit of skepticism from media outlets all over the spectrum about the sanctions and the effectiveness of the sanctions. What would you say the mood is of the White House correspondents these days?
Well, if there was any honeymoon period, it's now gotten to the period of separation and the likelihood of divorce. And I don't use those terms in a flip way, Rick. Reporters that one would think would be sympathetic to Jen Psaki and to the president often ask barbed questions and indicate their irritation on everything from the fate of the president's Build Back Better bill that he staked so much political capital on, is dead or alive. And it's just about whether he should have done things earlier in Ukraine and not let them go as far as he has. Also, there is a strong feeling that Afghanistan may have been a pivotal moment that ended hopes for this president and friendly briefings and turned them into the current case of conflict and clash. We'll find out in the weeks ahead. And remembering this is an election year, people will be watching those briefings closely.
John, there were three leading candidates for the Supreme Court vacancy. And for weeks, you have been saying Judge Jackson would be the pick. On Friday, she was selected by President Biden. I was a little surprised because I thought Jim Clyburn, the congressman from South Carolina, who had been very much in favor of Michelle Childs, I thought he might have some influence on the president, but I guess maybe I'm the only one that's surprised.
Well, the president did call Jim Clyburn to let him know that his choice. It should be noted that Judge Jackson is someone who is almost bred to be on the Supreme Court, not unlike Brett Kavanaugh. She clerked for a Supreme Court justice. In this case, Stephen Breyer himself was editor of the Harvard Law Review. And this is why I felt she would get the appointment, she was on the D.C. Court of Appeals, which has provided three of the current nine justices on the Supreme Court. She was on the second highest court in the land, and she worked for the justice who was stepping down. It just seemed a logical step that the White House would try to make Judge Jackson Madam Justice Jackson.
John, one of the Republican icons in the Senate is not going to fill out his term. Tell us what is going on with the senator from Oklahoma.
Well, 2 years after he was reelected with ease and at age 87, James Mountain Inhofe, Oklahoma's longest-serving U.S. senator, announced his resignation on Friday. Senator Inhofe's wife, Kay, or I should say his lovely wife, Kay, as he always introduces her, has been in poor health. And he also knows that if he has any chance of getting his top aide, Luke Holden, in as his successor, it has to be with a resignation and a truncated primary and election this year. Mr. Holden is almost certain to have competition from at least one of the Sooner State's Republican congressmen, if not Governor Kevin Stitt. In any event, Jim Inhofe was a legend since he came to the House back in 1986, a skeptic on climate change, a strong supporter of Americans' defenses, who rose to be chairman of the Armed Services Committee, and, among other things, a licensed pilot who said, "I'll quit the Senate when I can no longer fly an airplane upside down." Well, he was still doing that, but other circumstances led to his surprise resignation on Friday.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. You can follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure and never bored.
That's for sure. 7:18, Saturday morning update on WMAL. Still to come in this hour, Cheryl Atkinson's next. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland will join us this morning from CPAC in Orlando. Right now, Al BD's in WMAL Traffic Center.
Good morning. Around the Beltway, both in Maryland and Virginia, no reports of any crashes or construction on the inner loop or on the outer loop. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, between the two Beltways, BW Parkway and 95, you're at speed north and south. In Montgomery County on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, no delays northbound and southbound. And on 66 in Fairfax County, I have no reports of any construction, either on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A cool start to your weekend. Clouds this morning should give way to some sunshine. Temperatures will only work their way in the low to mid-40s, so definitely a cooler than average day. Average this time of year is about 51. Overnight, our winds will go southerly, so that tomorrow temperatures will rebound back into the mid-50s, so a nice, pleasant end of the weekend. With milder conditions and good sunshine, another push of some cooler air takes us back into the lower 40s as we kickstart the new work week. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraaff in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
31 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:19 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Be a part of the conversation and stay informed.
Follow WMALDC on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkinson hosts Full Measure. It's every Sunday morning on ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. And she's also got a great website, CherylAtkinson.com. She joins us this morning, and it is always wonderful to have you with us.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, we've seen so many angles on Ukraine in the news this week, and you will also be looking at Ukraine on Sunday morning. And what perspective?
Well, to act like someone's got a lock on what should happen and what went wrong, I think is a little bit misleading. So we're going to hear two different views on what happened and where we go from here. And I'll try to give enough context for people who haven't had time to follow every little bit of minutia, but want to know what's going on with this story.
We've heard a lot about the introduction of 5G, a faster network for our smartphones, but it is not coming without controversy, and there have been a couple of angles on this, and one that has had a significant impact on 5G and on airlines.
Yeah, you know, I first started covering this a couple of years ago and was shocked to find there are many studies, scientific studies and preeminent scientists who say that cell phone technology, even before 5G, is associated with all kinds of really long-term, chronic, horrible things that are happening to our population. Whether you believe it or not, there is a lot of scientific support for it, although government says it's fine, industry says it's fine. Now comes 5G, and among other health concerns, you know, everybody's been saying it's fine, nothing to worry about, makes your phones and devices work better and faster, that's all good. But I don't know if people know, a couple of weeks ago, the airlines almost grounded most of their fleet near big airports like Dallas and Chicago and New York, near where these 5G towers were about to be turned on. Even though some government agencies said it was fine, even though the 5G industry said there was nothing to worry about, the airline said, no, we're not flying our planes in these airports near these towers if you turn them on. It was a crisis. So they were preparing to cancel all these flights. Foreign airlines were not going to be flying in because of that. And they decided not to turn on those towers at the last minute, and they still haven't resolved what to do about that, with the airlines saying this could interfere with our signals and be, you know, make our planes crash because it would interfere, they fear anyway, it would interfere with an altimeter that tells you how far you are from the ground and other really important data.
Cheryl, help me out here. If the airlines are concerned about the impact it may have on altimeters, shouldn't we be a little concerned about what impact 5G might have on us if we're holding it against our ear on our smartphone?
Well, I think logic would tell you yes, and some scientists say absolutely. In fact, I revived the story I originally did on that in my podcast this week called Full Measure After Hours. If people are interested in hearing what the preeminent scientist on this has to say about what the studies show and about what this may do to the body and to fertility and to all kinds of things. Again, there's two sides to that. There are opposing viewpoints, with the industry saying there's no evidence that this stuff is true, but there are a lot of studies that suggest it is, and a lot of scientists on the other side. So, you know, do the research and think for yourself. I don't think people are going to quit using their cell phones, but it certainly helps to know if there are some risks that maybe there's a way to address. One funny thing, Rick, the scientist I interviewed, he almost seems like a nutty professor until you see what his credentials are and all the work that he's done and where he was educated. He wears metal fabric. He's so serious about not being exposed to these invisible waves that are in the air all around us. And he doesn't use a cell phone ever. And he uses a wired computer at his desk. That's how concerned he is about what comes off a cell phone.
When President Biden took office on Inauguration Day, he had someone fired 20 minutes into his new administration. It was a former member of the Trump administration. And tell us who it was, what he did, and why he was fired.
Well, I'm interviewing Michael Pack, and if people want to find out more, they can read all the bad stuff about Michael Pack, because there were dozens and dozens of articles written about someone no one's pretty much ever heard of, to try to oust him from this position as head of U.S. Agency of Global Media, which is head of Voice of America and other government-run broadcast agencies, which are supposed to broadcast American values around the world, but by many accounts has been lurched left into sort of a propaganda group, which is against their charter. They're not allowed to do news that's unbalanced and partisan. I mean, they could put some on one side, but then they have to balance it with some from the other. They're supposed to have a diverse range of views and American values. Well, they haven't been doing that for a long time. So Michael Pack comes in, was supposed to try to bring it back to the center, but he just got attacked every which way, kind of like Donald Trump did. He got sued and attacked and leaks to the media and everything you can think of. And about 20 minutes after Biden was inaugurated, he was the first person, we believe, that was fired under the Biden administration. That tells you how important those political activists think these agencies are to whatever it is they're trying to do, and not wanting it to be pulled back closer to the center.
Great stories tomorrow morning on ABC 7, 10 o'clock. It's Full Measure, and you will get Full Measure After Hours wherever you get your podcasts. Cheryl, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Have a good weekend.
And you too. It's 7:25, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, and if you are just joining us, it was a violent night in Ukraine, but as of this morning, the Ukrainian flag is still flying over the capital city in Ukraine. There was small arms fire reported overnight, and this morning, President Zelensky was offered a safe place by the U.S. and allies, but his response was, quote, "I need ammunition. I don't need a ride." He has been staying in the capital city of Kiev, and his ministers have stayed on. His parliament is there. One member of his parliament said he would be armed with an AK-47 to protect his country. Russia has fired over 200 missiles into Ukraine. Multiple casualties now reported this morning, but there has not been a number attributed as of this hour. There have been mass arrests of anti-war protesters in Moscow, the number estimated at 1,800. And the White House has requested $6.4 billion in aid funding from the Congress to be sent to Ukraine. It's 7:26, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. 7:30 News is next with Heather Curtis. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland will be live with us from CPAC in Orlando. Stay with us on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Russian troops are storming the Ukrainian capital today. Fox's Steve Harrigan is in Kyiv.
There were several incidents of street fighting inside central Kyiv. It was mainly small pockets of Russian special forces moving through the city and engaging with Ukrainian forces. We've seen on a number of different occasions the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, posting videos showing his people that he is still here, that he's not leaving. There were talks about possible negotiations between Ukraine and Russia.
The U.S. told Zelensky it would take him out of the country. He refused the offer. It took him 17 hours to drive from Kyiv to western Ukraine the other day. And now an Alexandria woman is hoping her brother won't go back. Alina Banisak says many men who left Kyiv dropped off their families and turned back around. Her brother's in western Ukraine with their father, but she told us yesterday he's considering returning to Kyiv.
That is something that, you know, I hope will not happen, But I understand if he has to go defend his country.
She says her brother, like many Ukrainian citizens, got a free gun from the government. The CDC is saying more Americans are safe to unmask in indoor public places, and schools can let kids and adults on school buses take them off. Prince William and Frederick County Public Schools say masks are now optional on school buses. WMAL Sports, the Wizards lost to the Spurs 157-153 in double overtime. Tonight they play the Cavaliers at 8. The Caps play the Flyers at 12:30 this afternoon. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia on the Beltway, I just looked into traffic cameras. I didn't see any crashes or construction. Inner loop and outer loop are at the posted speed limit. In Fairfax County on 66, eastbound and westbound lanes currently are at the posted speed limit. Now, if you're traveling on 95 in Virginia between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not tapping the brakes. Lanes are clear, northbound and southbound. And in the district, on 295, 395, and 695, all lanes are clear and at speed. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, decreasing clouds, a high near 43. Tonight, decreasing clouds, a low around 31. Right now, 34 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us every week. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart and a former CIA operative. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
All right. Well, you have been watching the overnight developments in Ukraine. The Ukrainian flag is still flying over the capital city. A very violent night. But the Russians have not scored a victory in their third day now. What do you make of the resistance and the resolve of the Ukrainian people?
Well, I think the Ukrainians are better equipped and motivated than Putin had counted on, and his forces weren't as ready as he thought. So I think from some of the sources I consider credible, there's indications that he's trying to bring in other reserves that he had not intended to use, that they have suffered some significant losses. And Rick, you know, we all have to understand that both sides are going to be less than truthful for any number of reasons, but it does look like the Ukrainians have made some pretty big blows. You've taken down a fully loaded aircraft of airborne troops. That's a big score of both psychologically and as well as militarily. I mean, you take out 150 people, That's a pretty big deal. And the aircraft, there's been dogfights, engagements. This is a 21st century war. And with all those things, it is notable that the Ukrainians are at least stopping an overwhelming force that they, you know, it's going to be going into day four now.
Now, there was a report that Putin was actually willing to meet with Zelensky, You know, Putin's been saying some kind of bizarre things the last several days, but he was kind of isolating Zelensky from the supposed drug dealer and neo-Nazis that Putin claims are running Ukraine. Help us understand what that strategy might be, if there is one there.
It's mafia. No, I mean, it's not. It's just as basic as it is. You're going to see Putin say all sorts of things that will, you know, help just actions. In this case, it's very simple, and I think it's been clear through other comments he's made. He's going to offer Zelensky a deal he can't refuse. You surrender, you live. You keep fighting, you die. And this is where I think Zelensky is completely clear about him being the target. And if you look at the military operation, the main advance has been right at Kyiv. And I said this in another interview last night. They're going for a decapitation, essentially. I mean, there's no reason to take out the entire country. I mean, clearly they're going to solidify their gains in Luhansk and Donetsk. But in this case, they really want a government that's friendly. I mean, that's why he made the comments about the other issues, about the drug dealers and all this other stuff. Putin wants a puppet government. And by the way, I don't know if people have noticed that the main axis of attack into Kyiv came out of Belarus, another puppet of the Soviet Union. Oh, there's a slip for you. I meant Russia. No, he's trying to bring back the Soviet Union. He wants satellite countries, which essentially are going to be available to him to essentially be used as pawns. And I think that's what he's trying. He's saying here he's going to take out. I don't think there's going to be any happiness regarding that meeting. It's all about just telling Zelensky, you're done, leave, or else.
You're a national security expert. Let's talk about the energy issue from a national security standpoint.
Well, where do we begin? Look, one of the things that's linked to energy is NATO. President Trump and others, including me, had said that Germany is setting itself up for Nord Stream 2, for Nord Stream 1, for Gazprom, for all of these Russian-based forces of energy was going to lead to bad things. And no matter what happens now, I don't believe for a minute Germany or other European nations are going to turn off their own spigot in the middle of winter. Right now, NATO has activated, for the first time ever, its response force. Rick, I've worked with allies. I've worked in that environment. And unless you're consistently doing exercises, trying to work amongst nations with languages, once I had to work with the French, one of my jobs was to translate intelligence summaries from French to English. Well, imagine that with 30 countries. What they're doing is no more, the activation of this thing is no more than the military equivalent of a strongly worded letter from lawyers. It means nothing. The only way there's going to be any credible, use of this is if they do something. And in this case, because there's a link back to oil, back to the resources that the Russians are pumping into Europe. And by the way, Germany benefits from this because Germany is the distribution point for much of the resource as it comes out of Russia. They distribute it to the rest of Europe. I have serious doubts that NATO is going to be able to do much because of this sort of Damocles they have hanging over their head regarding Russian oil. So it's a really interesting situation, and I don't see NATO being able to do much even if they wanted to at this point.
A lot of criticism about the lack of strength in sanctions. Talk a little bit about the SWIFT system, because we're hearing about, hey, why haven't we shut off Russian access to SWIFT? Tell us about SWIFT and then a little bit about the pros and cons of sanctioning Putin to that extent.
Yeah, there's two things that have not happened, or one has happened and one didn't happen, that indicates to me that Biden and company are completely unserious. One is John Kerry saying, oh, Vladimir Putin must stick with his promises regarding global warming. See, that right there tells me that they're really not serious about Putin. Secondly, if you really wanted to hurt Putin, you don't sanction all these resources which he knew you would go after. Now, I would argue that they're bait. What would really hurt him is a SWIFT system. The SWIFT system is the banking system. It's Belgian-run, which essentially is the clearinghouse for all transactions, major transactions between countries. This is a significant point of access for debit, for credit, for payment. It's everything. It's what has become the international standard. And a lot of money flows through that rapidly. The moment that you decide you're going to be serious, you would take Russia out of that. You would deprive Putin of the resource which is the profits he makes off of oil. But no one's going to be willing to do that. Everybody's afraid of the economic effects of pulling an economy which is either 10th or 11th any given day. The size of the economy of Russia is about the size of Italy. Yet people are afraid of you pulling that economy out of that system. Now, either they're serious about holding Putin and Russia accountable or they're not. And as long as they're not willing to pull them, Putin specifically, you know, via Russia, out of SWIFT, it tells me that no one is really serious about stopping this, that they're more worried about continuing the charade of everybody, you know, looks the other way and allows for Putin to continue to do this. So that's the issue that as I'm seeing it right now. Until they pull Russia out of SWIFT, there's really no true economic sanction that's going to have any impact on them that they haven't already figured out a way around.
All right, so you don't have a crystal ball, and we don't know how far Vladimir Putin will go. But
right.
As you see things now, is there any chance that the Ukrainians at least hold them off to some kind of a settlement that maybe only a region or two of the country are ceded to Russia? Or do you think ultimately Russia takes over the whole country?
Well, this is much like a situation where we've seen it before, where the Ukrainians' job is just not to lose. That's all they have to do. They have to bloody the Russians. They have to make the price of blood and treasure so significant and continuous that Putin cannot sustain it, either because the resources run out, that he doesn't have enough oil, gas, I mean, any number of things which would be required for his continued offensive operations. Or, you know, if they can't do that, obviously the capital is still the primary target. So if they were smart, they may, if they really do want to continue the fight, if they see Kiev is falling, they may want to move the government to a third location and continue the fight. Kiev is going to fall at this point. It's pretty clear that they can maybe last one, maybe two more nights. And that if you look at I'm looking at Reuters map right now. If you look at it, I would argue it's still a limited invasion. He's not going after every single city. He's going after targeted locations. This is very much a precise special operation with using some pretty big forces. But at this point, I do see the Ukrainian job is just don't lose. Just bloody Putin, draw it out. Make it so that he cannot continue. Otherwise, you're going to see Putin continue to, you know, to do things until he gets the government. The government has to survive, and they have to survive by making sure they don't get killed. So that's the best advice I could give them. The West right now is being very mixed on their response to this. And, of course, let me say this, and this is a political statement. Biden loses no matter what. If Zelensky and the Ukrainians survive, Biden looks bad because he didn't help enough. If Zelensky and Ukraine falls, he looks bad because he didn't deter Putin. It's a lose-lose for Biden, which it should be. And it's, frankly, a lose for the Ukrainian people who are caught in the middle of these larger geopolitical issues, which, frankly, their government and the Western governments have used them as a pawn against Putin for a long time. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, catch his Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, as always, thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you, Rick.
Appreciate it. 7:46, Saturday morning update. KT McFarland coming up next from CPAC, but right now we've got Al BD in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On 95 in Virginia, southbound in Woodbridge, there is a crash. White lane is blocked approaching the Prince William Parkway. 66 Fairfax County, no delays eastbound or westbound. Virginia side of the Beltway is clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, lanes are clear and at speed, inner loop and outer loop. In traveling between the two Beltways in Maryland on the BW Parkway or 95, no delays are being reported northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A cool start to your weekend. Clouds this morning should give way to some sunshine. Temperatures will only work their way in the low to mid 40s, so definitely a cooler than average day. Average this time of year is about 51. Overnight, our winds will go southerly, so that tomorrow temperatures will rebound back into the mid 50s, so a nice, pleasant end of the weekend with milder conditions and good sunshine. Another push of some cooler air takes us back into the lower 40s as we kickstart the new work week. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraff in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
31 degrees in the nation's capital. It's 7:48. The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us this morning. President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor, a board member of the American Conservative Union, and, of course, the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning from CPAC.
Good morning, Rick.
It's so great to have you there, and you've written an opinion piece at foxnews.com. I want to get into that first, and then I want to hear a lot about CPAC. But first off, your opinion piece posted this morning, headline, Three Ways to Stop Putin's Next Power Grab. The way we defeated the Soviet Union the last time around was by driving down the price of oil. But your note is next power grab. What does that mean for Ukraine? And then we'll talk about the next power grab.
You know, people are talking about, okay, well, can President Biden put on some sanctions to stop Putin and Russia taking over Ukraine? No, I think it's too late for that. Nothing's going to stop Putin now. But to their enormous credit, the Ukrainian president, very brave man, the mayor of Kiev, the military and even civilians, they're putting up a heck of a fight that no one expected them to do this. No one expected them to fight, but they are fighting. And sadly, their defeat is inevitable. And I think within days, Moscow is going to control Kiev one way or another. The only question is how high a price Moscow is going to be forced to pay. You know, Putin is a prideful man, and he takes his international reputation quite seriously. If this invasion becomes protracted, urban fighting, street to street, Putin's going to look weak. You know, how can the mightiest army in all of Europe be taken down by, or at least stopped by, or somewhat halted by this Ukrainian group of just a couple million people in the country of Ukraine who are standing up to the Russians? So that would make it very bad for Putin. But if there are civilian casualties, particularly significant civilian casualties, Putin is just going to look like a nasty bully. So either way, this is now Putin's biggest nightmare. But the question is not really about Ukraine. As I'm looking forward, what's next? If Putin wants to then move on the Baltics or move on some other vulnerable countries in Eastern Europe, how can we stop that? We have to think ahead about this. And I think that the three Baltic countries, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, they're NATO members, unlike Ukraine. They're NATO members. And if Putin tries to make a move against them, well, we could potentially have a Russia versus NATO fight. Nobody wants that. So what could we do? Well, the sanctions that President Biden has announced are just a slap on the wrist. The only sanctions that would make Putin pause might be to kick Russia out of the international banking system, SWIFT. And that's not going to happen because as long as our European allies, especially Germany, are dependent on Russian oil and natural gas for their economic survival, they're going to veto any action the United States might want to take to kick the Russians out of the international banking system and essentially stop his flow of oil to Europe. But there are three things that we could do right now. First, I think President Biden ought to come out and tell the American people, especially his supporters, the existential threat Russia poses to our national security requires the United States now and President Putin to reverse course. Take the shackles off the American energy industry that he imposed early in his presidency. You know, thanks to brilliant American engineers and scientists, we've figured out a way to get oil and natural gas out of rocks. And it turns out we have the best rocks in the world. We have the potential to power the world, to have more energy reserves than Saudi Arabia, Russia, or any other part of the world combined, and we could do it. We could become the world's new energy superpower, and I think we should use what Providence has provided us. The second thing he could do, though, is President Biden could go to our European allies, especially Germany, dependent upon Russian oil and gas for more than 50% of its energy needs, to tell them, look, we got your back. We are going to provide for you cheap, clean, American liquefied natural gas. We'll work with you to build those terminals. We will let you get off of Russian energy and thereby Russian leverage. You know, in the past, the Germans have been very reluctant to take American energy versus Russian. They've had the idea that if they had Russian energy, well, they'd have good relations with Russia. And I think the last couple of weeks will have shown everybody that that Russian energy comes at too high a political and economic price.
I want to turn to CPAC, and each year there are highlights, there are standouts, sometimes there are surprises. What would you say the highlights are at CPAC? And real quick, before we get to that, for somebody that may not be familiar with CPAC, tell us a little bit about it and the type of people who are there.
Well, CPAC is a unique thing in America. It is the Conservative Political Action Coalition. And it is the mothership for all conservatives and Republicans. It's an annual conference. It used to take place outside of Washington, D.C., but after COVID and the Maryland governor basically couldn't guarantee the ability for us to have it there, it moved to Orlando, Florida. We're now doing two, one in Orlando, Florida, and another one in Texas every year. But this is the one in Orlando, Florida. It's just as big as the old CPAC outside of Washington, D.C., draws people from all over the world. And it's the largest media event after the Super Bowl every year. So this is a really big deal. And it's an opportunity for all of the leading Republican, presidential potential people, right? They're all here. Each one of them is making a speech. It's also an opportunity to showcase the sort of younger and rising leaders in the conservative Republican movement. And it brings the experts on everything from, you know, national security, like me, to education policy. So it's a huge gathering of people with ideas and influence. And this year, I've been happy to see that a lot of the people talking about the national security stuff are talking about what I've been talking about for years, which is to say, if we really want to defeat our adversaries, we need to do what Reagan did, which is push down the price of oil, using American energy in our case, and that bankrupts the bad guys, Russia, Iran, and others. And so we should look at energy security as, in fact, one of the major elements of national security. But the real person who has stood out, and everybody's been terrific, Governor DeSantis opened the event, Secretary Pompeo spoke, Rick Grenell, former ambassador to Germany and head of the intelligence committee, CIA, he spoke. President Trump is speaking this afternoon, but the person who spoke last night who was really impressive was Tulsi Gabbard, former congresswoman from Hawaii, Democrat, and has often been at odds with her own party, especially over the forever wars. You know, the Democrats have supported the forever wars just as vigorously as the neocon Republicans, and she was just awesome. I mean, she's only 40 years old, and she went back and gave us all a lesson in the American Constitution and what our founding fathers talked about and meant, and how what's happened in Washington is now the elites of both political parties have taken over, and they're bossing everybody around, whether it's over mask mandates or environmental policy or tax policy or voting regulations. And that's really not what America is supposed to be about. And she had a lot of standing ovations, you know, not because she's a Democrat showing up at a Republican event, but because she's showing the way to what's the middle ground. Where do we go from here? We know we can't keep going like this, where the Republicans just hate the Democrats and the Democrats hate the Republicans and nothing ever gets done. It's like a tennis match, right? Where when the Republicans get the ball, one thing said, and then the Democrats get the ball and they undo everything the Republicans did. So she's pointing a middle way, which I think is the wave of the future. And she was extremely well received.
Well, I know you are speaking today. We've got 1 minute left. We've got you speaking today and also a headliner tonight.
Yes, we have actually President Trump is coming tonight. And everyone is interested in what he's got to say. You know, I personally have said to him, and I know others have, don't talk about the last election. We're all past that. Whether you think it was right, whether you think it was wrong, it's done. Look to the future. And the value, I think, of President Trump, love him or hate him, he's been right on just about every major issue. He hasn't been terribly articulate about it. But I want to find out where his head is. What's he thinking about for not only the nation, but particularly national security issues.
It is KT McFarland. She is at CPAC this morning. Thank you so much for being with us, KT. And we want to send you to her Fox Opinion piece, Three Ways to Stop Putin's Next Power Grab. That was published this morning at foxnews.com. And KT, once again, thank you so much for being with us.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. That's it. for the Saturday Morning Update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.